welcome to Rhapsody Cast. I am Matthew.
I'm Nate.
And we're at episode 13, the spooky Halloween episode.
Ooh.
Yeah. So if you remember, we said episode 12, we were going to release an episode on Halloween. That was what we said. And then we were said, like, maybe season 2 a couple months later. I'm going to just pretend we didn't say which Halloween. This is a Halloween, and this is an episode. Season 2's been canceled.
I'm tired.
Things have shifted a lot since the last time we recorded. Last time we recorded was right before Nate's wedding.
Yep. I got married. I went to Disney. I moved. I got a new job.
Now you're moving again.
Now I'm moving again.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nate's life, everybody. He's busy. And so, Nate and I are pursuing other things. We have a comic, a webcomic.
Ah, yes.
LuchaRagnarok.com. No one knows how to spell it.
Oh, yeah. So, just go to LuchaRagnarok.com. Just learn to spell, idiot.
Yeah. There you go. It'll be in the show notes. We did show notes back in the day.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did.
You said we did, but we didn't.
No, we did.
No, they were like below. You were like, we'll put this link in to MWire in the show notes, and it was like, that's not in the show notes.
It wasn't?
No, look.
Oh, man. I was good about most things. I said, whatever, MWire doesn't even exist anymore.
I don't know.
That was another podcast we did, and then it became Weekend of the Movies.
Uh-huh.
And that was another podcast we did. And then it became Cinema Geeks, and we got left behind.
Well, I was busy.
You were busy. You're always busy.
I'm busy.
I missed a couple episodes, and then they was just like, it was like one of those, like, if you no call, no show to a job twice, then you don't work there or whatever.
Right.
It was just like, I showed up one week, and they're like, yeah, you don't work here anymore.
We replaced you.
They weren't that dickish, but they did replace me with a lady, which, honestly, if you have a podcast, do it. People want women to do things, and that, you know, diversity.
Right.
We were diverse. We had Travis for a little bit.
What, Rhapsody Cast?
Yeah, Rhapsody Cast. So this is episode 13, spooky Halloween episode. Our prompts were, I gave Crips, you gave
public transportation,
which you said was the scariest thing you could think of.
I don't know, it was a dumb joke.
It was a dumb joke.
It ruined my story. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, so if you missed us, welcome back. This is an episode, and if you didn't,
happy
miss
Halloween.
Us, yeah, yeah, happy Halloween.
Halloween's awesome.
It's
I
one
like
of the better
it.
Holidays.
I want to dress up like okay, so I have an idea for a Halloween costume with my wife.
Yeah?
My wife likes the Jim and the Holograms.
Yes, she does.
She wants to dress up like Jim. And I want to dress up like one of the guys from the rock band The Misfits with the skull paint and the
Danzig.
Yeah.
Do you want to be Danzig?
Or the other, I don't know.
You know Danzig's coming out with an album.
Okay.
In November. It's his first album in like 5 years.
Cool.
I'm super excited for it.
Alright.
It's a cover album. Sorry.
No, that's cool. Well, there's this one dude, I don't even know who he is. Not a huge fan of the Misfits. I've been listening to him for a very short time, but he's like super cool. He's got cool face paint. I want to be like, I want to be that guy. And then it'd be like, it's a really obscure joke where it's like, you're Jim, who's he? He's a scary skeleton? I'm like, no, he's from the Misfits. Their songs are better.
Does the Misfits have any ties? Like, was it like a villain band or
the
something?
The villain were the Misfits.
Okay, but you want to be like the Misfits from the real world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like it. I like it.
And their songs are better.
Like, the real Misfits songs are way better than anything in Jim and the Holograms.
Right.
But Jim and the Holograms was a pretty solid 80s show. Or a pretty average 80s show, an 80s show.
Well, I liked it. It had, like, 3 songs an episode.
Brand new original songs every episode.
It was crazy. It was like Metalocalypse, but with pop.
Yeah, Popolopolis.
Popolopolis.
Take it back to Queen Dopplepopolis.
Right.
Actually, I've been thinking about Halloween costumes. We're recording this in advance to Halloween, if you haven't realized.
Well, I mean, we're not recording it the day of. That'd be weird.
We're recording it the day of, and then editing it, and then putting it out.
Ugh.
Yeah, that'd be the worst. But it's like over a month before. So
we're on the ball this time.
For one episode.
Yeah.
We were on the ball for our first episode. Except for the fact that we hadn't established any social media anything. So, like, we were like, we'll have social media when this episode actually comes up.
I don't think we social mediaed this entire thing. Do we even have a Twitter account for it?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, I get emails every day from the Rhapsody Cast Twitter account.
What does it say?
Hey, you should follow more people.
Oh! Hey, you should probably start using this thing.
every day.
Why don't you silence them? That's weird.
Because it's one a day, and so it's just like, it's like I'm at work, and it's like, hey, you got an email from Twitter, and I was like, oh, what does it say? And it's like, oh, it's for Rhapsody Cast.
Nah.
See, like, I got three.
Whatever.
But yeah, Rhapsody Cast has a Twitter, it has a Facebook,
Gmail. Did we ever, like use it?
I did 100% of it. It's different than Lucha Ragnarok, where we're, like, 50-50ing it, kind of.
Yeah.
Just kind of whoever feels like posting that day, and then also...
Definitely trying harder with Lucha Ragnarok.
Yes. It's more your thing. It's visual media, which we always talked about during Rhapsody Cast, is that you are a visual guy and I'm a written guy.
Right.
So we moved towards things that made more sense for us as a duo.
Yeah. You can edit any of this out.
Yeah, it's getting a little long.
Yeah, yeah.
I might not edit it out. I mean, I don't know if you saw what I sent into that one text message, but the last five episodes or whatever of this show,
yeah,
have a total of almost 10 views.
Yeah, so no one's gonna watch it. You're saying?
Yeah, 75643.
Oh, that's weird. I watched it. I watched Commoners last night.
This was 2 days ago.
Oh. But that doesn't update.
This is a screenshot.
Oh,
from
shit.
From 6 a.m. 2 days ago.
Oh, fuck. All right.
Cool. I wasn't going to just pull up the YouTube real quick. I have the screenshot saved on my... But,
you wizard. You're a wizard of phones.
I'm a phone wizard, which is not as good as a pinball wizard. So, yeah. That's us bantering. Hi, Mom. You're probably the only one listening.
Hi, David. I don't think you listen to this anymore.
Hello, Robbie. Because Robbie's the only...
Kyle! Remember Kyle?
Kyle was our best fan. I would say Kyle's our best fan.
Yeah, yeah.
He definitely commented on things.
He said he wanted to be a guest one time.
What?
Yeah, he says, I like the idea of a guest, like, before yeah. Travis came on.
Yeah.
And then he was like, if you guys want a guest, I'll do it.
You never told me that.
It was on the Facebook. I just read it, like, last night.
I thought you said you didn't think we had a Facebook.
Not Facebook. YouTube.
Oh.
It was on YouTube. I read it last night.
I did not. I read his comments because they went to my email address. I'm surprised I don't remember that. Mm. Or maybe I was like, hey, you should get Kyle. We should get Kyle.
I talk a lot more to Kyle now than before.
Does Kyle want to be on episode 14?
Hey, man. You could do it. I'll just listen. Writing stories is hard.
It's so much fun. I don't know. Creating to me is so much fun.
It takes me too long.
Yeah.
It's not worth it to me.
It takes you a long time, I guess.
I got drawings
really.
To do.
You did you snapped this together in like 4 hours. I spent on my story.
That's 4 hours. It could have been. That's almost like a half a page of Lucha.
Yeah, I guess.
That's like the
sketches,
the
and maybe the inks, some of the inks,
Yeah, probably.
I get it. You're way better at your thing, and I'm way better at my thing.
Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know, and I'm more willing to devote time to this.
Hmm.
So yeah, but what I didn't get to was I think Robbie is the only person who's like, I finally finished Rhapsody Cast and I wish there were more episodes.
Oh, cool.
He was the first person to ever say, you guys gonna do more because I want more.
Oh, cool.
Then he'll be the only one to ever say that, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks, Robbie. We love you.
We love you, Robbie.
Happy wedding. Happy honeymoon. Where is he going?
I don't know. We could go to his honeypot if you wanted to check.
I don't want
to
go to a honeypot. What's a honeypot? That sounds gross.
Oh, it's not honeypot. It's honey fund.
Yeah.
For honeymoon fun.
I don't want to fund their honey. I'm already gonna give them money. They can use that.
This is probably not even going to work. But he... well, it's funny because we're recording in...
Nope, server not found.
That's because I spelled honey weird because I spelled it like honeypot dev. It's not important at all. We are the worst at focusing. So back to the podcast we were doing.
Oh, fuck.
I think you did your story first, then I did my story second. Like, do you want to do that again, or do you want to switch it up?
No, I'm good. I'll do it.
All right. So let's hear your story of public transportation and Crips.
Okay.
Trust me, mine's gonna be terrible.
My story is called Spooky Crip Crack.
Keeping it in.
My story is called Spooky Crip Crack. Alright, here we go.
I've got the levels up, but I'm
sure. Oh my god. No, look at that shit.
You exploded the mic.
I exploded.
We're probably too close to this mic.
Hey. My story is called
Alright. Oh, jeez.
I was listening to that. All right.
I'm just leaving that up.
In the world of Tarantino.
Oh, wait, no. What's the...
It's called Spooky Crib Crab. It doesn't matter.
Spooky Crib Crab?
Crib Crab. Yes.
It's about a baby crab, and he is spooky.
Yep. Well, okay. In the world of Tarantino, they have Halloween. There's no explanation as to why, but there is just Halloween. Exactly the same shit as what's happening right now. Today. It's Halloween today.
It is.
This story takes place on Halloween. That was my point.
I like it.
Okay. Balak the Vampire King.
Nice.
/ Really Cool Dog Man. Adjusted his fake beard and looked into the mirror. Yes, this is the one, he said, reassuring himself that his 75th costume choice of music beard was the correct one.
Nice.
With all the wealth and unlimited resources of a vampire king / everyone's best friend has, picking a Halloween costume for the party was very difficult. He walked outside his estate into the cold night air and looked at his enchantacraft. This particular craft was designed especially for Halloween parties. It was black, orange, and purple, with skulls, jack-o'-lanterns, bats, black cats, caramel apples, haunted houses, witches, brooms, spider's webs, tombstones, and a pentagram to always be in touch with his main man, the literal devil.
Literal devil. Best character.
Best character. It was a Halloween mobile. It was a Halloween mobile, and it was glorious. Balak said the magic words, "Got what I got the hard way, and I'll make it better each and every day. So, honey, don't you fret, because you ain't seen nothing yet." And the two bat wings on either side opened up like a DeLorean. I have no other way to describe it than like a DeLorean. You know what I mean. He got inside. What?
Nah, dude. I'm loving your story. It's so good.
It's a bit rambly so far.
It's so good. It's almost like you wrote it at 3 in the morning.
I wanted to make a reference to Homestead Runner, how they used to do all those Halloween. I think they come back. They came back,
kind of.
They came back a little bit. I don't know.
They did like 2 videos, I think.
They should just do YouTube, honestly.
They did.
They did?
When they came back, they did a YouTube, to my knowledge.
Oh, I gotta subscribe to that shit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think.
You can't interact. You can't have interactivity.
Yeah, that was an issue.
I'm gonna get so sidetracked because I'm gonna talk about Flash and anyway. He drove through the busy streets of Bolingbrook, which was voted spookiest town name 30 years in a row, and they aren't gonna let Skellington take the title anytime soon. Shut your mouth. It was a good joke.
No, I like that joke.
It's like,
because it's like skeleton, and it's like Skellington, which everyone calls him. I'm explaining the joke, because I do
that. Yes, what you do.
It was a pun. It wasn't fun, though.
It was. Okay, people. He saw people and beasts walking the streets, all in crazy dress. The spirit of Halloween was truly with the people of Bolingbrook today. He was at the corner of 23rd and 15th. He was going to a spirit party with all the other holiday spirits.
You have the weirdest energy levels.
I'm sorry.
You're fine.
Did you get that joke? The spirit of Halloween was over at the corner. The spirit was hanging out.
I missed that.
All right, whatever. Going forward, I've lost my place already. Suddenly, his craft sputtered and stopped. Ah, peas, Balak thought. I forgot to do regular maintenance since the last year I drove this craft. He cursed himself at his stupidity and then thought, curse, that's what I'll do. He went to the back of the craft to the pentagram and performed his seance to summon the devil. He seanced with all his might, but no luck. Oh, it's Halloween. The devil's busy. Guess I'll have to take a cab. He stood on the side of the road by his broken-down car and hailed a cab. A bright yellow craft stopped, and Balak looked inside. The driver was a fat man, curiously wearing sunglasses and dressed all in black. "Can you take me to 1428 Elm Street?" Balak asked. "Get in," the driver said in a gruff, posh accent. Balak entered the back seat of the craft. It was comfortable enough, but smelled like poo. "Where are you headed?" the driver asked. 1428 Elm Street. It's a Halloween party." The driver was silent. Balak hated awkward cab rides. The cab drove towards the party. "Hey, this is it," Balak said. The driver said nothing. Yo, this is... Oh.
I can imagine that.
He just passed it. "Hey, man, stop." The driver said nothing. Now worried, Balak said, "What are you doing? Stop immediately." "No," the driver shouted back. Or I should say, "No!" the driver shouted back. He's got very intense. A window between the front and back seat of the craft rose up, sealing Balak away. A green gas filled the chamber and Balak passed out. Balak slowly opened his eyes. He was in a small, empty, dark room. A cockroach crept by, startling him. He slowly stood up and saw a door. On the door was a note which read, "Let's play a game. To gain your freedom, you must search to find notes which have clues to other notes. There are 8 notes in total. Good luck." The note had a key taped to the bottom. Balak took the key and used it in the door. He opened it and stepped outside. He was in a forest, trees as far as he could see. "Oh, fuck this shit," he said and sprinted forward. "Stop," a booming, whiny voice said from above. "Play my game." "Fuck you, creepy dude, I'm getting out of here soon. I'm getting out of here." Balak smacked into nothing. As if an invisible force field covered the forest, he could go no further. "Bwahaha, do my invisible walls impress you? What about my trees? They are all identical." "That is a stupid thing to point out," Balak shouted. "This game is stupid and I hate you." "Oh, come on, find my notes. That's a stupid objective. This game sucks."
I get your joke. Okay. I got it.
Balak pounded on the invisible wall until he phased through it, and then he stepped forward and fell through the ground into a black abyss. He looked around. There was nothing. The cab driver took off the magic headset attached to Balak's head. Steam escaped from the magicanical monstrosity. Balak was sitting tied to a chair. He surveyed the place. It was a massive old crypt with hundreds of tombs. "Do you understand now?" the fat man whined. I wish I could do an English accent. Balak looked in horror. The man wore a pumpkin mask with fiery eyes. "I spent my life in this steam machine playing these terrible games. After my escape, I've been showing people the horrors of this cursed device. These tombs are the people I've shown the device to. No one has survived." "Where did it come from?" Balak asked. The cabbie took off his mask and looked into Balak's puppy eyes. "In all my years of research, no one knows exactly who created it. But in some of the old texts that I have read, they have referred to the creator as the developer. Alright, fuck this, I'm out. With that, he turned into a puppy bat, releasing himself from the constraints and flew out of the crypt and into the night. Ah, peas, he thought. I could have just flown to the party the whole time. The end.
Yes. Oh, peas.
Oh, peas.
Did he say that in the Magicraft episode?
No.
Aw.
That was, I just felt like saying that.
I wish you had done the Balak voice.
Yeah, he's got the very sexy voice.
He's like a sexy French dog man.
Yeah.
He's like a Pepe Le Pew. I don't even know if... I'm not going to explain your joke, but I got all of it, and I enjoyed it.
Cool.
Way to go, Nate. So, it's been a year since we did these prompts.
Yeah.
And I started writing almost immediately.
What do you mean, like last year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so this story
the
you
first
had...
first thousand words were written over the course of the month following episode 12.
Huh.
But don't worry, I read them like four times before I started writing, so I'm like, I'm good enough to pick up my own language, I guess. At that time, I was watching Flight of the Conchords season 2, and I was listening to Flight of the Conchords' second album. And as I've pointed out in other episodes, what I'm doing influences my writing, at least to some point. Do you remember the song I Told You I Was Free?
Yep.
So there's one little bit of that song, like where he's listing out his itinerary for a day. And I was like, ah, I like that joke. I'm going to write a story around that joke.
Okay.
And so I set out to do essentially three things in this story. That was one of the three. I'll tell you what the other two are at the end.
Okay.
I don't want to ruin it.
Cool.
So, my story, Crips Public Transportation.
Right.
It's called A Witch's Eclipse.
Da-da-da-da. Bah!
Herc Bloodfisted, famous Lucheim Arena gladiator, angrily grumbled as he paced about the small, open-faced enclosure. Herc was accompanied by his longtime companions, both of whom were taking the slight delay far better than he was. Leaning against the back of the structure, Lavandra, the elven archer, watched the massive, muscle-bound brute uncomfortably fret about, her keen eyes carefully tracking his every movement. The third member of their party, Fernic Runehammer, sat in stoic silence, mouthing the words of a soundless prayer from his wooden bench seat. "Where is it?" the gladiator growled, and to no one in particular. "The coach should arrive any minute now," Fernic explained, gesturing towards the timing wick. The timing wick was a long, white string that dangled in the back of the enclosure. At one end was a small flame, which burned inexorably towards the opposite end. Along its length, at steady intervals, were red marks denoting the approximate arrival times of the municipal public coach service of Arborin. The small flame had nearly reached the next crimson mark. "If this were Lucheim, three conveyances would have come and gone by now," the gladiator continued pacing as he roared his remark. "If this were Lucheim, we would ride on the backs of your loyal followers to wherever we wanted to go," Fernic said in jest, but for all he knew, it could be accurate. "And it'd be faster," Herc added through clenched teeth. Fernic thought the comment humorous, but he could never tell if his companion was joking or not. Everything he uttered sounded angry. The fuming gladiator paced in furious silence until the squeaking wheels of an approaching transport could be heard. Herc stopped his methodic walking, and all three adventurers turned to watch the human-powered rickshaw agonizingly approach. One step at a time. The muscle-adorned man grimaced as he tried to fight an angry headache. Eyes clenching shut, he growled, "This vehicle can barely hold two of us. The quest becomes more of a chore every second." "It's fine," Lavandra assured. "I'll just walk." Herc flashed her an angry look before consenting. "Fine, but if you tire and die in the crypt, I won't waste time mourning you." The elf gave a dismissive gesture as the gladiator climbed into the rickshaw. Fernic approached the driver, producing a tightly rolled scroll as he did. Wordlessly, the dwarf gestured to a location on the small map. The driver studied it briefly, then nodded. The paladin held up a brightly polished tiara, which was likely a week's salary for the aged cart puller. The elderly worker's eyes widened momentarily before he greedily snatched the coin and stowed it in a breast pocket of his shabby coat. Once the dwarf was seated, the rickshaw lurched into motion, driving at a surprisingly fast pace for the driver's apparent age. Lavandra kept up with what appeared to be little effort, but Fernick was still concerned. If the legend of the crypt was true, then they would all need to be at their best if they wanted to have a chance of survival. The older man glanced hard into the night sky, then spoke, his voice awkwardly even, considering how much his body seemed to be working. You know, there's a legend surrounding that tomb, and a night such as this. Aye, the holy dwarf acknowledged. We aim to stop any unholy rituals being performed on this witch's eclipse, and hopefully dispel any discomfort the locals may have with the seemingly haunted crypt. Legs still plodding away, the human conveyance laughed a hideous cackle. Well, that crypt and its legend both existed before I pulled my first customer, so I wish you luck. You'll need it. Thank you, sir, Fernick said, with a nodding bow. Herc leaned close to his friend as if to whisper something, and then said loudly, Stop talking to the old man! His voice reminds me of a mummy's grandfather. It unsettles me. The paladin sighed, wishing he had a way to apologize to the driver without the gladiator hearing. He had this feeling more and more often lately. Since he couldn't apologize, he instead sat there in silence for the rest of the way to the crypt. As they loped down the old, worn trail, the dark scenery they could make out in the slowly wavering moonlight began to shift. First from the civilization of the town, to the fields and occasional house of farmsteads, to an ominous dry forest that seemed to be slowly encroaching on the farmland. 2 hours into their journey found them surrounded by a thicket of dry, leafless branches, reaching out in a tangled, horrifying mess. Something is wrong in this forest. The voice was Lavandra's, and seemed to come from all around them. The two men in the rickshaw looked about, but neither could spot the elf. She had quite a skill at being able to disappear in any forest, no matter the foliage or how thin the trees were. The evil that radiates from the upcoming crypt is killing everything that surrounds it. Good, Herc said. I love killing evil crypts! Fernick rolled his eyes. It was going to be a long night. The dark shadow of the crypt rose into view. As the rickshaw slowed to a stop, Fernick noticed Lavandra standing outside the entrance, arms folded across her chest with the satisfied smile of a race winner on her face, and Fernick wondered casually how long she'd been waiting. As the two climbed from the human-powered cart, the driver offered another good luck before turning to go back the way they had come. Even in his advanced age, he barely glistened with sweat, his breathing still even and measured. In his classic sign of I'm ready, Herc flipped down the face mask of his golden gladiator helm. Let's get this over with! His words were muffled behind the polished likeness of his own face as he walked into the crumbling archways of what was once an impressive edifice. The dwarf and the elf shared a glance before following in his grand wake. The gladiator was the first to cross the threshold of the crypt. A stale, chill air settled at the entrance. As his steady, sure foot came down on an old stone tile, the floor gave way, issuing a series of clicks. Trap! Fernick called out. A flashing glint of steel caught Herc's eye, and the massive hulk of a man sprung back as the deadly sharp pendulum released from the ceiling above him. Unerringly fast, the blade followed his backward escape, and though his reflexes were quick, it still caught up and effortlessly knifed through the flesh and bone of his forearm before continuing on. The veteran warrior collapsed to the ground with a pained groan, clutching his career-ending wound to his bare chest. Rourke's blood! The paladin cursed. Ducking under the swinging trap, the dwarf crawled over to his injured companion. A cursory inspection told him everything he needed to know. This is going to take a lot out of me, he stated flatly. Just do it, the gladiator growled weakly. Though the words had the angry edge Herc always affected, Fernick could feel the pain and concern in his partner's voice. A bit unsettling, he realized that it might be the most humanizing moment Herc had ever shared with another living being. The god-empowered medic hefted his steel-bound tome and flipped its well-worn pages to the healing meditation and began to chant. While the ritual of mending was occurring, Lavandra watched as the pendulum was losing momentum naturally. Slipping between it and the wall, she carefully used the magical radiance issuing from the dwarf's spell to scout ahead for other traps or infernal devices. Delicately, her agile fingers poked and prodded, searching for loose stones, tripwire, or any other mechanism that might bring damnation down upon them. Tediously careful, the elf secured a safe passage for another handful of yards before the glow of the healing spell winked out, only to be replaced moments later with the light of a torch. The elf's superior eyes could make do with next to no light, but the dwarf's torch radiance was a welcome addition that made scouting easier. The two men caught up with her presently, and Lavandra noted that had she not witnessed it firsthand, she would never know which of Herc's arms had been severed. Fernick, for all his effort, looked ghastly and tired. Without a word, the masked gladiator strode past her, taking up the lead once again. After a short, hazard-free walk, the trio found themselves at a four-way junction, a sandy, rubble-strewn path leading in every direction a compass points. Which way? The dwarf asked as he regarded his companions. The elven archer peered briefly down each passage, studying for clues as the best option. There's no time for this, Herc bellowed as he stamped down the right leading path, his angry footfalls leaving small craters in the sand. His two companions shared a look before once again trailing behind him. Though tactless, he was right. Lavandra had noted the moon's position before entering the crypt. The largest moon, the demon, had almost entirely eclipsed the angel, the ringed moon. All that remained was for the smallest moon, the witch, to join them. Then a witch's eclipse would take over the sky. That was why they were here. It had long been prophesied that when the demon and the witch held court without the angel's benevolent gaze upon them, that a witch, through the right ritual, could become pregnant with a demon's child.
Yeah.
Using a mortal surrogate. Lavandra sucked the damp air through her nose, its ancient must filling her nostrils and its clingy dust coating her throat. A moment later, she released the foul air as a deep sigh. Breaking up a witch orgy wasn't the most appealing prospect, but it was all for the greater good. Besides, she remembered, the town of Arborin was offering a considerable reward to clear the crypt out and debunk any myth surrounding it. A barely audible click invaded her thoughts. Reflexively, she turned on her heel and grabbed her tired dwarf friend by the scruff of his enameled breastplate and sprinted the way they had come as fast as she could drag the confused man. The floor gave way beneath her, angling so sharply that she was sure Herc would be swallowed by its opening depths. She didn't contemplate this. Morning would have to come later. Her feet kicked up sand and dust in her wake as she pressed forward. The floor leveled off, and she thought to stop until her trained eye caught movement in the ceiling. Lavandra pushed on, dragging the still-confused paladin behind her. With the last bit of effort, she threw him forward just as the massive stone slab descended from above. The rocky barrier slammed shut behind her, missing her heels by little more than a finger's width. Exhausted in more ways than one, the elf leaned back against the blockage and tried to catch her breath, her right arm pulsing with soreness from the effort. All Fernic could do was stare at her in bewilderment. The floor disappeared beneath him. He caught back up with it a number of feet below where he had last met, and this time it was at a decidedly sharper angle than he remembered. Herc's whole body jolted as he landed on the sandy chute and fell backwards. He spared a look back as he slid inexorably towards certain doom, and watched the elf and the dwarf flee rather than attempt to help him. The block falling resonated around him as he slipped into darkness, and he donned a grim smile, pleased that they likely died as cowards rather than save him from his fate. His last thought before he came to an end was of Lushheim, and how he never should have left his fame and glory behind in its magnificent arena. Herc came to a skittering stop shortly thereafter. Though still surrounded by the old cracking stone, somehow this deeper chamber felt entirely different. The hall was lit intermittently with half-melted candles, and the thick air had lost its mustiness, replaced instead with the fragrant aroma of burning incense. The gladiator lifted himself from the floor, brushed the sand from his kilt and legs, and drew his short broadsword before continuing cautiously down the path. The alluring scent built in strength as he traveled, and before long he heard moaning and laboring grunts some distance away. He knew it could only be one thing. "Evil fornication," he growled through bared teeth, and then ran full tilt towards the unmistakable sound. As the sounds of copulations grew louder and sloppier, Herc passed through an archway and into a large, cavernous chamber. There he beheld exactly what he expected this entire night. Runes, drawn in what was likely blood, formed a circle on the floor. Along the circle's perimeter dotted a random assortment of burning candles and incense, with thick, encroaching shadows ringing around the whole ensemble. In the center of the magical ring was a chair, with a man tied to it. His trousers were down around his bound ankles, and straddled atop him was a small-framed woman in loose-fitting black robes. The witch bounced up and down on the man's lap, panting and occasionally moaning as she did. The silent onlooker carefully studied the other captive male. His head was turned to one side, a strained look masking his whole face. With his hands and eyes clenched shut, he drooled through a rag that was tied around his mouth, effectively gagging him as he rocked involuntarily in his seat. Herc wasn't sure whether to pity the man or be angry at his weakness, but he knew his only course of action. Wordlessly and with great purpose, the gladiator rushed from the shadows of the hallway. His leaping strides passed the distance of the mating pair in about a second. Then, without a thought or doubt, and with no hesitation, he plunged his sword into the distracted witch. The robe, clinging to her back with sweat, afforded the sexual aggressor no protection as the powerful blow sent the well-worn blade through her spine. Unsatisfied, Herc urged the weapon on, forcing the point out of her chest and continuing until it was buried again, this time in the heart of the victim. Pinned together, the death convulsions of the two was a grim mockery of their coupling a mere seconds before.
Jesus, man!
It was done. The witch and the demon surrogate had been dealt with. He hadn't needed the help of the elf or the dwarf, and he was kind of glad to be rid of the pair of traitorous cowards. Then he heard it. From an unseen speaker, a series of tisks floated to him. out of the murky shadows just beyond the candlelight. Before he could unsheathe his sword from the gruesome sexual display, some invisible force gripped him, robbing him of control of his limbs. Caught entirely in the power of some binding hex, the recently victorious warrior could do nothing to prevent himself from tumbling backwards. Lying supine next to the chair at the circle's center, Herc's eyes angrily scanned the darkness for his magical assailant. Over the rise and fall of his muscled chest, he watched her saunter into view. She wore the same dark robes as the other witch, though they clung more closely to her fuller frame. Golden hair, tangled in dire need of brushing, framed her pointed face, while a sinister smile curled up from beneath her crooked nose. "Well, well, well," she mused as she kneeled down beside him. "Aren't you a specimen?" With her eyes fixed on his own, he felt her warm hand grasp his knee, then began to slide under his kilt, slowly rising up his thigh. "And you've even dressed for the occasion. You've made this all so easy for me." Her hand stopped uncomfortably high on the inside of his leg. "I promise this will be anything but easy," Herc bluff-fisted defiantly declared in a strained voice. "Lucheim gladiators are made of stamina and determination." "Well," her sultry voice mused, "I guess I'll just have to call in the cavalry." With a wink, she addressed the room, her gaze never wavering from his. "Still here, Agatha?" A seductive purring issued from all around. "Hmm," it continued. "I wouldn't miss this for all of the world." Punctuating her silence, another woman seemed to simply fade into existence above him. The helpless man couldn't make out the features of the floating witch, because her whole being had a translucence that didn't seem to catch light like a living body would. The incorporeal figure drifted down to rest on his chest. He could feel pressure as she straddled him, but it wasn't as if a physical being was on top of him. "Honey," she coaxed, "if you think you have stamina, you have never slept with a ghost." And with that, the duo of witches descended upon him greedily like a dragon loosed in a kingdom's treasury. When the pair reached the intersection, they turned to consult one another, a luxury they hadn't had in a while. "We're tired and down a man," Furtick inventoried. "Do we head back and lick our wounds, or press forward for the greater good?" Blavandra glanced down one corridor, then the next. If Herc were here, he would call them a pair of cowards and leave him behind. Herc. Though she hadn't enjoyed his stern, angry demeanor, she had to admit he had lovable moments at times, and he was clearly the mightiest of their group. It was hard to imagine that he was gone, cast into a pit of vipers or sleeping in a bed of spikes. "We go on," she decided resolutely, "in memory of Herc Bloodfisted, Lucheim's champion, and for the good of all living beings here in Mistvale." The dwarf gave a nod, thoroughly inspired, and then the two adventurers turned down a different path and delved deeper into the crypt. The next leg of the exploration was slower going, as the two silently reasoned that a third trap could whittle them down to a party of one. Methodically, Lavandra stalked for loose tiles in the sand, checked for slits in the wall where bolts or blades might dip out. Eventually, they found themselves in front of a pair of sarcophagi, each set into the wall, facing each other. Furnick held his torch aloft, bathing the ancient coffins in light as nimble elven fingers explored their every nook and crevice. After she was satisfied that the tombs held no triggering mechanism, the pair continued to walk their chosen passageway. After just a few paces, an unsettling stony scraping caught their collective attention. They turned back in unison, just in time to watch them open on mirrored hinges, the two doors blocking their return path. Lavandra's bow was in her hand and notched with an arrow quicker than a hummingbird's wing. Issuing a bone-chilling rattle, two magically animated skeletons emerged, one from either grave. They were adorned in the tattered cloth of ages-old burial vestments, and brandishing a rusty, pocked longsword each. The undead duet took rattling steps towards the living intruders. The first arrow skirted off the side of a skull, and the second passed easily between ribs, soaring roughly where a heart should be. Growling an uncharacteristic roar, the dwarf in enameled armor charged their would-be attackers. His thick forearm took one skeleton in the pelvis, and he forced it spine-first into the stone wall. The ancient vertebra dissolved into dust as it connected, and the upper half toppled away from the lower. Furnick relished in his victory for only a brief moment before the bottom half of the severed skeleton lashed out, kicking him squarely in the shin. He reeled back from the unexpected blow, and hadn't recovered from the first attack when the top half of the injured skeleton lunged, sinking its blade in the dwarf's fat calf. "Oh. Run!" he bellowed at his companion. "But," she began to protest. He shot her a fiery look that both commanded her flight and pleaded with her not to waste his sacrificial distraction. The elf loosed her third arrow before turning and running from the second death she couldn't prevent that night.
Dang.
Lavandra ran free and fast. No longer burdened by her two burly companions, she could move at full run, the walls a practical blur beside her. This venture was a failure. Anymore, she sought only an exit, egress from this self-inflicted nightmare. After the first tense moments passed, a calm came over her. She was fast and agile. The skeletons would likely never catch her. And she'd managed to avoid every trap so far. Her confidence returned to her, just long enough for her to catch her foot on a thin, nearly invisible wire strung about ankle height. She tripped, hitting the ground hard, and didn't even manage to flip over before the stone block came down on top of her.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Deep in the bowels of the crypt, Kirk Bloodfisted's mettle was being put to the test. He wasn't sure how long his assault had lasted for, but it had been some time since the living witch had climbed from him and crawled away. She now lay just outside the runic ring, passed out from exhaustion, and, he hoped, satisfaction. The paralyzing hex had worn out at about the same time as the witch, and now his hands rested on Agatha's hips as she rode atop him, her back facing him. He was drained and at his limit, but her moans had grown deep and throaty, and he was sure she was nearly done too. As if willed into reality, the ghost witch went rigid and stopped suddenly, a cry of pleasure escaping from somewhere between the netherworld and her nether region. The climactic scream could have given a banshee cause for complaint, Herc thought, and as the orgasmic utterance faded, so too did the transparent woman. The triumphant gladiator rested on the ground for a few moments before attempting to stand. Every ounce of muscle in him ached and screamed as he did so. He was covered in sweat and other bodily fluids, and had left a wet, blurry outline on the floor. He struggled to pull his kilt down in an attempt to recover some of his lost dignity. He hated to admit, but had he not been alone, this whole ordeal might have been avoided. Herc pulled his sword from the cairn that had towered over him in his weakest moment, then retrieved the golden helmet he had lost sometime during the night. The candles and incense had long burned to cinders, but a light issued from one of the far walls, giving the room murky details. He went towards that light, and found a flight of stairs leading to a door, illumination clawing through the cracks around it. Herc fumbled around with the door until it swung outwards, allowing the harsh sunlight to cascade into the crypt that very nearly was his grave. It took a bit for his eyes to adjust to the light. He slowly noticed two figures waiting patiently before him. The taller was a woman, with shapely curves and hair blacker than a vampire's soul. It was, however, the shorter of the two who spoke up. "So," he said, "I take it you are in need of a new group of cohorts." Armani White offered his hand for Herc Bloodfisted to shake.
Cool.
My story.
It was brutal.
It was brutal. It was horrifying, scary, yes?
Yeah.
You got a face.
Hmm?
What's your face?
Nothing.
Didn't enjoy it.
No, I don't know. There wasn't enough, spooky bets.
Spooky bets.
I had like three spooky bets in my story.
Did you? Were you counting?
Two of them were the wings, the bat wings on the car. And one was in my head that I didn't put on the paper. Anyway.
What about the bat dog?
Oh, yeah, he is a bat. Four.
That's more. I didn't have any bat wings, I don't think.
Anyway.
None of bat wings.
How'd you feel about that story?
I don't know. I wanted to get it out of me, because cool. I thought of it for a year ago, and I haven't written it until just now.
Gotta do Ghost Freeway.
But I don't know, like that was another thing, was like, I rewrote how that happened in my head a dozen times.
Mm.
At one time he went into it willingly, but I don't know, I like having him have a weak moment since he's like such a dick.
Yeah.
That was the third thing, by the way. I wanted it to be like, I had three characters and two of them were like kind of stuck with this dickish character.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted that to go bad for them and then him to survive.
Oh, okay.
That was my third one. The dick survives and everyone else dies.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Only the good die young, I guess.
Well.
So.
Halloween. What are you doing on Halloween?
I don't know, actually.
You help me move?
Amy always. Are you moving on Halloween?
No one's going to help me move.
Are you moving on Halloween day? That is so weird.
It's not like we're moving on Halloween night.
Halloween. Are you going to do anything that night, or are you going to be too tired from moving?
No, we'll have a candy dish for anyone that comes by.
Oh, yeah? That's it. I don't think we've passed out candy since we moved to this house.
We don't know what it's going to be like, so we have to prepare, otherwise, you know.
Oh, yeah, I mean, because you're in an apartment building. There might be kids, there might not be.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. I've only ever been in
houses. I mean, it's a big community, so, like...
Yeah.
They might just have a big, like,
Halloween
thing going on.
I get you. That's interesting.
So that'd be interesting. You know? Because it's, like, a lot of people in one small area.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of want to do that. Like, I kind of want to live, like, in a New York apartment building where it's, like, 20 stories.
I mean, it's... No.
It's not like I get that. It's, you know, a tiny town, corn country.
Basically, yeah.
But, I mean, there's, you know, what, 20, 30 apartments? That's still a lot.
Like, 300 people in a building. That's crazy. I don't like it.
You don't?
Nah.
I haven't done it, so I can't say.
Yeah. I don't like people.
The only apartment I've ever lived in was a townhouse, so there was 5 of us.
Yeah.
That's it. Episode 13.
That was
it. Spooky Halloween special. The end of an era.
End of an era?
An end of a rhapsody.
Nice.
If you want to get a hold of us, I still have the RhapsodyCast Twitter, which is not tweeted in probably over a year. I have the RhapsodyCast email, RhapsodyCast Gmail. I am at FridleyScent on Twitter, personally.
I changed my...
Nate changed the Twitter.
Yeah, it's Crocker Comics now. It's more...
At Crocker Comics.
It's more descriptive of what I actually want to do, instead of Adolfo Shabadoo, which is a dumb joke.
It was a good joke.
I think I got a lot of followers just because my name was Adolfo Shabadoo.
People were like, is this the dancer from the 80s?
And then I was like, nope.
And then
he's tweeting about comics. What is he doing?
It does help that your picture isn't just your, like, white-ass face. It's something you drew.
Yeah. My face is too white.
It's assy.
I need to step out into the sunlight, get some sun in my face, make it darker, because that's nice to look at.
I think that was started off as a song, and then you just made it up after that?
I make everything up.
Well, Weevil, why don't you get out of your home? So, contact us.
No. Yes. No, go to Lucha Ragnarok, because that's the shit.
Go to lucharagnarok.com. I will maybe post that in the show notes. This might not ever go onto the internet. I hope it does. That is a look more horrified than when I read my story. Are you upset that you might have wasted 3 hours of your life?
A little bit. Well, 7 or something.
Because, like, I don't know. Is it less of a waste if this goes up and one person listens?
Yeah, no. It's less of... No. Just put it up, because that's the thing.
I'm going to put it up.
What?
I'm going to put it up.
Oh, okay.
That was like a joke. I did not mean to ruin your life. If you want more from us, well, I mean, naturally, if you want more from us, lucharagnarok.com. But let us know if you enjoyed the trip to the end.
No one died. People should have died in my story.
Like, everyone died in my story.
I stopped killing characters after, like, the first one.
Yeah, you kill off every single character in the first one, except for Zordon, who you then killed in the sixth story. But, like, anyway. You didn't kill him in it. You, like, killed him between them. And I was like, and then, like, Travis and I were like, wait, is he dead? And you're like, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah,
he's dead. Like, oh. Travis listened to all of ours.
Was it Zordon? No, it was Zordis.
Zordis. Sorry. Lord, like, Zordis.
It was not trademark copyright. I mean, it is to me.
Yeah, you got that copy written because you wrote that copy.
I wrote that. You can trademark anything. You can put that TM on anything you want.
And it just counts.
Yeah, it does. You just, to put the R, though, you need to actually register it with the government.
That's the difference between a trademark and a registered trademark.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody. Everybody.
Everybody, everybody.
Oh, once again, thank you to Black Bear Combo for providing us the best intro and outro.
They're cool.
Fun fact.
What?
I got to meet Gary for the first time a month ago.
Oh, Jerry.
Jerry.
So you said Gary.
I said Gary. That's my bad. It was drinking. There was a lot of drinking that night.
Yes. We didn't drink.
I didn't drink anything.
I went to a strip club, and I spent $8. I like that story, though. I went to a strip club, spent $8 to get in, and that was it.
That was it.
And I fell asleep.
We spent a bunch of money to get you a lap dance that you refused.
Yep. Not a fan of strip clubs, found out.
Yeah, because you needed to know.
Yeah. Nah.
No.
Anyway.
Almost got kicked out for sleeping in the strip club.
Yeah, the other guy did. The guy that actually wanted to go to the strip club almost got kicked out for sleeping.
Yeah.
He was super tired. I don't know
what. You got slapped by a stripper.
No. That was, like, a waitress or something.
Mm-mm. Slapped. She was a on the chest. She slapped your chest to wake you up. She was a stripper that was pregnant, and then while she was pregnant, instead of stripping, giving massages, which strip club massage is the most dubious-sounding thing in the world.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Huh.
We talked to her. She came over and talked at us for a good 10 minutes, and we were all just kind of staring at each other like, yeah, we don't want a massage. You're weird. Go away.
Yeah. Then she hit me.
And then she caught you caught her eye, and she went over and hit you.
That's what I do. I catch strippers' eyes, and they hit me. I don't know. Put that in.
This is dumb. Guys, let us know if you ever like Rhapsody Cast.
Yeah, comment, subscribe.
here's the thing. We've got 6 subscribers on YouTube.
Hey, 2.
6.
I saw 2. Pull that shit up.
I will pull that shit up.
I gotta call my girlfriend. Or my wife, I mean. I got married in between episodes.
Literally true. If we double the subscribers, maybe I'll release an episode. And I'll do a bloopers reel, because we've got content that's deleted. Nate put a blooper at the end of the 5th episode, which I would have rather kept out until the blooper reel, but whatever. No one's listening at this point anyway. We're over an hour into it. So, yeah. Like us, comment. Let us know if you actually liked any of it. I think we're gonna move on to other projects. He's gonna draw Lucha Ragnarok, I'm gonna write it. He's gonna start his own comic. I'm gonna try to write a full novel, because I've got the mind for that, right, guys? Thanks for listening. I can't stress that enough. The 50 people who listened to the first episode on YouTube, I think we had closer to 50 for most of them on Podomatic, iTunes. I don't know. Thanks again. Goodbye.